And after a weather-induced delay, yes, my hometown was hit by a tornado. Fortunately, my family and my house survives. But after that brief, how long did I not have internet for? 3 or 4 days? Whatever, delay. We are back with the Call to Dirkhanit podcast. My guest host tonight, who's becoming more of my permanent co-host, is...
Nick.
Nick, nice to have you back with the podcast.
That's good to be back. We should have a three-way with Bill one time, since he seems to be the other guy who comes up here a lot.
Yeah, that's a good idea, and I haven't heard from Bill in a couple of weeks. So, Bill, if you download the podcast, which I know that you do, and you hear this, please call me, because I can't obviously be bothered to pick up the phone and call you. And the movie for discussion today will be 2010's, yes, this one's recently fresh in all of our memories, Kick-Ass. This is a movie that I saw through questionable legality recently because I was unable to go and see it in the theaters. And that's because the big theater that we go to that's in the mall near my house refused to show this movie.
Really? Interesting.
Yes, I think it was the Carasotis chain or whatever that chain is. Yeah, they refused to show Kick-Ass in any of their theaters whatsoever. So I remember when my girlfriend and I were going to go to the movies on a date, I wanted to go see Kick-Ass, but they didn't have it, so we ended up seeing the Tina Fey, Steve Carell comedy Date Night instead of Kick-Ass. But that was all right, because that movie was funny, so...
It looked like it'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, well, it's the material is obviously elevated by the participation of Carell and Fey, so...
Oh, yeah, I figured their interaction would be like, I'm not a big Tina Fey fan, but those two together would probably be pretty funny.
Yeah, and they were, and I liked that movie. But I also liked Kick-Ass, which, again, is from 2010. It was released during the spring, the recent spring, and was directed by a British film director, Matthew Vaughn, who's also known for such films as Layer Cake, which is a great film, and if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
I concur on that.
And then 2007's Stardust, which I was really psyched for that movie. I was really hyped up to see that. And then when I saw it, I just had a very tepid, very lukewarm response to it. So I don't know if you've seen Stardust or not, but...
I have. I didn't like it, but I didn't dislike it, too. It was just kind of there.
People on the internet love Stardust, like... Everybody that I've talked to, like on comment talkback boards and stuff like that, it's very popular. It just didn't speak to me at all.
With Stardust, I really enjoyed the visual flair, and I thought it was directed well. I think for me the problems was more the actual story, which I guess is more of Neil Gaiman's thing than Matthew Vaughn's.
Right, and I should note that I'm a Neil Gaiman fan. I count myself among his fans. And Stardust, to me, is just kind of like a lesser work from him. I was a huge fan of Coraline, which was released last year and nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Feature. I was a huge fan of that, but Stardust just didn't speak to me. We should also note that Matthew Vaughn was once tapped to direct X-Men 3.
That is true. He bowed out. For different sources will give you different reasons.
Yeah, there was a lot of controversy over the production of X-Men 3. So he was obviously replaced by Brett Ratner.
That being said, he's going to be directing X-Men First Class.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And weren't there like two or three other people that once were either attached to direct or rumored to direct X-Men 3 as well?
I think so. One singer dropped out unexpectedly. Fox kind of scrambled to find someone. Vaughn had signed on, and then he dropped out, and then Ratner signed on to complete what Vaughn had already begun. So
interesting production behind that movie. And I just want to say this about Layer Cake as well. Matthew Vaughn's one of his first movies, if not his first. Daniel Craig's performance in that is basically what got him the job as James Bond.
Yeah, you know, I'm not surprised at that at all. With the exception of the very end of the movie, I really enjoyed Layer Cake and thought it was a top-notch film.
You know, speaking of Matthew Vaughn, going off on him, what you were talking about, you talked about the visual style in Stardust, and you talked about, you just mentioned some of his directorial skills and his ability to adapt things pretty well. He is kind of the perfect studio director in a lot of ways, so I'm glad to see that he's getting work. I'm glad to see that he's doing the new X-Men movie because I find him to be a very competent director, And I do find that he does have a pretty good visual sense and a pretty good ability to tell stories. I want to talk about the characters and the plot and that behind Kick-Ass a little bit. Like we said, it was an adaptation. I don't know if we said that or not, but so I can edit that out. Kick-Ass is an adaptation of a comic book by Mark Miller. Is that correct?
Yes, Mark Millar, yes. We should talk a little bit about the production of how this film got put together. It's actually kind of interesting. I don't know how much you know about that, Zach.
I believe that this film, the movie rights were already in place before the first issue of the comic even was released. Is that correct?
Kind of. I think it was actually at the premiere of Stardust. Mark Millar bumped into Matthew Vaughn, and he was telling him about his idea of the comic he was in the process of writing, which became Kick-Ass. And apparently Matthew Vaughn loved it, the idea, so much that he's like, this has to be turned into a movie right away. So they secured the film rights, and then they took it to every studio, and every studio turned them down because of the violence and the 11-year-old girl and all of that.
And it was eventually released by Lionsgate.
Yeah, eventually. But Matthew Vaughn financed that movie pretty much by himself, by getting like loans and donations and stuff like that. So they had the completed movie, then they just tried selling it to different studios, and there became, I guess, like a bidding war over it, because the studios really liked what they ended up seeing.
I'm not surprised, because the film is very, very unique as far as comic book movies go. We don't often get a lot of hard R, ultra-violent comic book movies, and we should talk a little bit about the controversy that surrounded this film when it was released. Back in January of 2010, so a few months ago now, there was a press screening, and there was some negative buzz that came from that screening because of the character of Hit Girl. The language that she used, the violence that was portrayed. She gets brutally beaten by an adult at one point in the film, and then she's also using guns and swords and haphazardly dispatching bad guys left and right. So there was this controversy around this character, and it kind of brewed and simmered for a few months there until the film was released. And it was a huge deal on the internet. Like, Hit Girl became like popular on 4chan and things like that. The film was some prominent film critics like Roger Ebert stepped up and derided the film for the violence and the language and the, you know, negative portrayal of this 11-year-old girl throughout the film.
Roger Ebert can go shove it, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I respect the guy, but sometimes his reviews are just so like, what is he talking about? Like, last 10 years, he's just gone so downhill. I mean, I don't understand half the stuff that he talks about. But
he has a tendency to go off the deep end rather easily. Also, you got to figure the guy is in his late 60s, early 70s. He's pretty old at this point, and this is obviously not a film for the the older generations.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't know. This is my big question about the whole controversy. You have Jodie Foster in Taxi Cab, or Taxi Driver, I'm sorry. She's playing this, how old was she, like 14, 15 years old?
Yeah, and she plays a prostitute.
A prostitute who does some pretty lewd and crude things, and that's considered edgy and dramatic and award-worthy. And then you have this situation in Kick-Ass, and that's just vulgar and bad, because it's being done as a comedy, kind of winking at the camera when it's being done. I don't know. It seems like it doesn't make sense to me.
That's a good point. Kick-Ass is, in a lot of ways, a comedy in that it's very satirical. It almost borders on parody in some places. It's almost like a parody of the ultra gritty, ultra dark Frank Miller books of the mid to late 80s in that bygone era.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Returns and things of that nature.
Read the actual graphic novel, or the book, it's totally done as a parody of just comics taken to the extreme. It's intentional in that.
Right. Yeah. It's so much so that Nicolas Cage's character in the film, Big Daddy, is actually a very direct parody or homage to Batman.
Yeah, especially when he puts on his Adam West impersonation.
Which is fantastic, which we should talk about a little bit later. But yeah. I do want to talk about the cast. Now, we mentioned that the Cage himself, Nicolas Cage, and his hairpiece. as Paul Chapman of the Greatest Movie Ever podcast would say. He plays the character of Big Daddy, who's a vigilante. He was a cop who was set up by Mark Strong, who plays the mob boss, mafia boss, by the name of Frank D'Amico. That's right, Frank D'Amico. Yeah. Mark Strong, he's consistently appeared in a few bigger movies in the last few years, and I'm really starting to like this guy a lot. He played the villain in the recent Sherlock Holmes adaptation from Guy Ritchie.
Terrible, by the way.
He played the villain in one of my favorite movies, one of your apparently least favorite movies, 2007's Sunshine.
I'm
selling you short.
I don't dislike Sunshine. I really liked it up until it became a hack and slash horror movie, but we'll save that for a Sunshine podcast.
Nick, any chance I get to throw you under the bus, I'm going to do it.
I hate you.
He also appeared in the recent Russell Crowe version of Robin Hood, which I haven't seen, but which I've heard is pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm a big Robin Hood fan, and I'm going to avoid that like the plague.
Aaron Johnson plays the titular character of Kick-Ass, otherwise known as a mild-mannered high school student Dave. And I gotta say, I've never seen him, I don't think, in anything else before, and I thought that he did a very, very good job as Kick-Ass. I thought that his performance was very strong.
I liked him too.
Yeah, I have no idea what else he's been in. This is the first I've ever seen him, I believe, in anything, and I thought that he was great. As far as other characters go,
don't forget about McLovin.
Yes, McLovin, who I can't even pronounce his last name, Christopher Mintz Plasse, I think, or Mintz Plasse or Plasse. I have no idea.
You know, I'm sure he's listening right now, and if he wants to correct us, he knows how to contact us.
CultureCanada@gmail.com. Plays Chris D'Amico, the son of the mob boss, Frank D'Amico, as well as the superhero Red Mist. And then earlier we talked about Hit Girl, the violent, foul-mouthed 11-year-old. She is played by Chloe Grace Moretz. Again, a very strong performance. I don't tend to like kids in movies at all. In fact, I was just recently watching some program where there was a little kid acting in it. I think it was like an episode of SVU or something I was watching with my girlfriend. And the kid was just like so unnatural and so bad at acting. And then I watched Kick-Ass and I was like, holy crap, this girl has a very natural screen presence. So I expect her to pop up in a lot more movies and TV projects. And at least I hope that she will.
I completely agree. I've actually seen her in a few things here and there. And I'm always amazed at her ability for her acting ability at such a young age, and especially after Kick-Ass, she needs to pick her next couple projects very carefully, because either she'll disappear to obscurity or she will, not to use another comparison again, be the next Jodie Foster.
Yeah, I definitely don't want her to be typecast as like a foul-mouthed, violent character in subsequent films. Yeah, so you're right. I think that she needs to pick her roles wisely too. But just looking at her IMDb page, it looks like she's in a whole bunch of movies coming up here. So that's good to see, because I really liked what she brought to the film. I guess I should just say it that I thought the acting in this movie was pretty good all around. I said earlier I wanted to talk a little bit about Nicolas Cage and his performance in this movie as Big Daddy, and he was my favorite part of the film. Every time he was on screen, I kept waiting for him to go into that Adam West impression, and every time he did, I lost every time. I thought that was genius casting, having him be in this movie. And I also like the way that Nicolas Cage is like a good sport about how he's not a very good actor and how he doesn't choose film roles very wisely. So I like that he's able to kind of like, because this is very, he's stepping into self-parody very much, I think, lately in some of his movies.
So oh yeah,
I'm glad to see that he can like do a project like this and not take it seriously. I'm glad to see he's got a good sense of humor about himself. And we should say Nicolas Cage, huge comic book fan.
Oh yeah, I mean he named his kid Kal-El, aka Superman's Krypton name, and he took his last name to separate himself from the I can't think of his.
Oh, he's a Coppola.
Yeah, there you go. I couldn't think of that. He was a Coppola to like separate himself from that, to like get his acting career on his own
some of his film roles recently have been just so hilariously bad. I'm talking about movies like The Wicker Man, Ghost Rider, Next.
Or Treasure.
Ghost Rider is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. but then he'll do something like, he'll be in Kick-Ass, or he'll be in Bad Lieutenant, and like he'll totally like reaffirm why you like him as an actor to begin with. I'm even looking forward to The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I'm cautiously optimistic about that, but
I should say that I'm cautiously optimistic as well. I really like Nicolas Cage. I think he's great, and I think that he works very well in this movie.
I agree. I had previously read the book, and when I learned that Nick Cage was going to be Big Daddy, I thought, you know, I could see that working.
Not to compare it to this too much, because these are obviously very two different films, but I kind of had the same reaction to it as I did with Heath Ledger's Joker, where every time he was on screen, I just wanted to watch him because he was unpredictable. You didn't know what he was going to do next. And Big Daddy and Hit Girl are such unpredictable and wild and violent characters. You never know, like, if the person standing next to someone is going to have, like, their head chopped off in some horrible way, or if they're going to get blown away with, like, a shotgun blast to the face or something like that. So that's probably why those two were my favorite parts of the film, because when they were on screen, you weren't quite sure what was going to happen.
You mentioned Mark Strong a little bit earlier. I'd like to go back to that just for a second. I think his character is probably my favorite part of the flick, because in the book the villain is it's just a paper character. You don't know anything about him, and they really expanded on that a lot in the film. And I really think I love the way how Mark Strong just had this dry comedic element to like everything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
That especially like after he watches the videotape of Big Daddy taking down his men, he just has this dumbfounded expression on his face that it's just hilarious to look at it. Like, he can't honestly believe what's going on, but at the same time, that just happened. And another bit later on where one of his henchmen walks in with a bazooka, and he just looks up and is like, "What's with the bazooka?" He's like, "Yeah, I got one." He just kind of looks at him like deadpan for a second and just kind of, okay, just sort of like just takes it with a grain of salt.
Just accepts it.
Yeah.
Just bazooka, and he's like, yeah, yeah. Like, as in like, hey, I could see that. Yeah, sure, why not?
I mean, I think Mark Strong, I would love to see Mark Strong do more comedic roles, because I think he has a real good knack for him just seeing it in this movie here.
He's got some good, some great comic timing in this film, and I agree, he's great. The source material, I don't. There's nothing like revolutionary going on. The story is kind of straightforward, but the actors, I think, really elevate the source material. As is the case with some movies. Like, I want to say, like the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, very straightforward action adventure swashbuckling movie, but that was elevated by some strong performances by like Jeffrey Rush and Johnny Depp, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that same feeling during Kick-Ass as well. There were parts of it that to me were kind of rote and kind of like you could guess what the characters were going to say next, especially during like the love story between Dave/Kick-Ass and Katie. Like, you knew what was going to happen there. You knew that they were going to get together and all that. And it's very, very predictable in a lot of ways. But the performances of the actor really elevated the material.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, especially the example of the love story. When I read the book, I honestly, Zach, I totally fell in love with the Kick-Ass comic. I mean, the way how you kind of gushed over Watchmen when you were telling me about it for the first time is kind of like the same sort of thing with me in this book. And the thing about the book, and they changed things, obviously, for a movie, because it would not have worked as a movie, but the book is, we were talking about this with The Chocolate War, is very nihilistic and very pessimistic. Like, in it, Kick-Ass and Katie never get together. In fact, when Dave reveals that he's not gay, she gets mad at him and has her boyfriend kick his ass. It ends on a very depressing note because Dave is still this sad, pathetic person at the end of the story that he was at the beginning of the story. The only thing he had going for him was the fact he became a cultural phenomenon. Obviously, they changed that in the movie because that sort of ending would not have worked in a film. And I understand that, and I totally I go with it because the movie's its own thing, but I just felt like I needed to throw that out there.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because it is really hard to have a movie with a downer ending. I mean, just audiences don't like it. So,
well, I mean, don't get me wrong, the villain's defeated. The movie follows the same outline that the book does, but just like a lot of the key elements are different.
Yeah. Well, as we all know, as Archie in the Chocolate War says, life is shit, so hopefully in the future we'll see some more movies that are nihilistic and pessimistic and misanthropic and all that kind of thing. I want to talk a little bit about how this film was marketed, because I thought this film was marketed horribly after I saw it. And I remember when I first saw the trailer, I saw the trailer for this when I went to see that terrible piece of crap, Zombieland. Controversial statement there. I saw the trailer for this movie when I went with my roommates to see Zombieland, and I thought the trailer was terrible. And I was like, oh, this movie looks totally stupid. I don't want to see this at all. And I kind of put it out of the back of my mind until I was talking to you, and you brought it up, and you were telling me, oh, yeah, the comic is really cool, and Mark Miller wrote it, and I remember you had told me about your story where you had gotten to meet Mark Miller and gotten his autograph and things like that. So I started getting a little bit more excited about the movie, thinking, okay, well, maybe it's just been marketed wrong. Like, to me, when I first watched that trailer, they really emphasized, like, the slapstick comedy, and they really downplay, like, the violence and the action and the adventure of it. And it seems to me like the trailer was, like, Mystery Man 2 or Mystery Men 2. Like, it seemed really generic, and I don't know, maybe it was because it wasn't the Red Band trailer, it was just the general audience's trailer, but for whatever reason, when I first saw the trailer for this movie, I thought, that looks really, really, really stupid. And oh, look, McLovin's in another movie, and he's playing McLovin again. And they really emphasized that McLovin was in it, because, you know, people like that character, and Superbad was a funny movie, so they want to try and capitalize on that. I get that. I understand that. Red Mist isn't even really in the movie, until about three-fourths of the way through or so?
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't, like, McLovin appears earlier on, but,
right.
But yeah, Red Mist as the costumed character, yeah, doesn't appear until about, like, three-quarters of the way through.
Yeah, probably that. Two-thirds, three-fourths, right in that
yeah.
range there. But yeah, I saw the trailer, and I was really like, my response to it was like, wow, that looks really dumb. I don't want to see that movie. But then you kind of got me a bit excited for it again, and then I already mentioned earlier about how the local theater wasn't playing it, so I didn't get a chance to see it. So when I finally did watch it, I was like, wow, the trailer was totally, totally mismarketed this movie, really misadvertised this movie. There was a lot more action and a lot more adventure and violence, and there were some real dramatic moments. Like, I really love the scene where Hit Girl is rescuing Big Daddy and rescuing Kick-Ass. They've got that great score that they actually took from Sunshine.
Yeah, I heard that a lot of the score of this movie was just tracked in from, like, other films.
Yeah, and it was very, very well shot and well edited. And it wasn't like you see with a lot of modern action movies where there's shaky cam and you can't tell what's going on. It was a very, very well choreographed scene. Some great dramatic moments peppered throughout this film. It was nothing like the trailer, I thought, whatsoever. I was expecting Red Mist to be in, like, the entire thing, and, like, him and Kick-Ass were going to team up and stuff like that, and it really doesn't play out that way. So, I don't know, what were your thoughts on the advertising? Did you have the same experience that I did?
Well, Zach, as you kind of know, my experience coming into this movie is completely different from yours. Like, I had seen, like, while I was at the comic book convention, the Chicago Comic Con, a.k.a. Wizard World, a.k.a. I don't know what they're calling it anymore, but, like, Mark Miller had a panel, and I went to it, and he showed 20 minutes of the film as, like, early marketing. Several of those, like, one of those sequences was when Kick-Ass's first night, where he gets stabbed and subsequently hit by the car. Another one was Hit Girl's first appearance in the film, where she comes in and just, like, destroys that gang in, you know, the horribly violent ways. So I kind of knew already going in what was to be kind of expected. And also, I after I saw the Mark Miller panel, I tracked down the comic and quickly read it. So I kind of knew what was going in. And plus, there was a lot of internet ads for this movie, like the Red Band trailer, and there was like a specific. There were a couple of Red Band trailers. There's another one specifically highlighting Hit Girl and a couple of other sequences. So when I saw the mainstream trailers, I didn't have that same reaction because I'd seen other things. And I already knew kind of what to expect, so I didn't have that misdirection, because I guess I kind of knew already of the, I had a good understanding of what the movie was about. This film was going, it's a very niche film. They could have spent like $200 million on this movie easily, and it would have been a complete flop. Right now, the film, looking at Wikipedia, the source of all truth, currently it's made $93 million. To me, that's a fantastic profit.
Right.
Maybe if they were expecting it to do Batman Begins or Dark Knight numbers, then the studio people need to have their heads checked, because this movie was not going to do that.
It makes sense.
And can I make an early prediction?
Yes.
Right now, it looks like they're on their way to make a sequel, Kick-Ass 2. I got to say that this film is probably going to have a good shelf life in terms of DVD sales and whatnot. I got a feeling when Kick-Ass 2 comes around, it's going to have a larger splash at the box office.
You know, I got to say that I kind of hope that they don't ever make a sequel to it.
Well, according to Mark Miller, before he even started writing Kick-Ass, he had an idea for three stories that would have been a trilogy in comics.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now hoping that since the first movie got made, that they will be adapted into films, and Matthew Vaughn seems behind the idea, and I think all the cast members seem to be in on it too, and right now it's tentative for 2012 for Kick-Ass 2.
Well, I would be up for watching the sequel, obviously, because I like this film a lot. So we have gone on for about 36 minutes here according to my timer. There's so much more that we could talk about with Kick-Ass. You don't see a film like this released too often. This film, I think, is very, very strong. We didn't really get a chance to talk too much about the weaknesses that we had with it. I do have problems with this film. The love story, I think, is just very tacked on.
That's an invention of the film.
Right. Similar to The Chocolate War.
But at least this one was fleshed out.
Yeah, a little more fleshed out. There wasn't just two scenes, one of which involved the main character just kissing the girl.
In a dream sequence.
So, Nick, as far as Kick-Ass goes, is this a... Because we are really short on time.
Well, we can cut a lot of that stuff out.
Is this a film that that you would ultimately cult or can?
I have to say, Kick-Ass is a film I would totally cult. When I first saw it, the 20-minute preview a year ago, I was blown away, and I'm glad to see that my expectations for that movie were reasonably met. So yes, this film cult it.
As far as I go, many times I get really, really leery of films that are made and marketed towards an exclusive sliver of the population. And I think that you could make the argument that Kick-Ass is definitely that type of film. Like, to put it into easier to understand terms, like movies that come out that are specifically designed to appeal to a small subset of a smaller subset of a population, like movies like Zombieland, which we talked about, or movies like Repo: The Genetic Opera, which are just kind of designed to come out and already have a cult following. I get a bit tired of those, because it seems like we've had a lot of those come out in the past few years. And I do think that you could kind of lump Kick-Ass in with some of those films. But I do think that this film is transcendently good in a lot of ways. There is so much to like about it. It doesn't ever take itself too seriously, and yet it still has moments that are very dramatic and very very poignant and very funny in a lot of places. I think this is a great movie, and my expectations were totally met and exceeded. I do think that it was marketed a little weirdly, especially if you were like me and you just saw the general trailer, you didn't see the Red Band one. But yeah, this is definitely a film that I would recommend to guys that are, and females too, to anybody that's around our age It's definitely not for the Roger Ebert crowd. I will gladly take Kick-Ass any day of the week. I think that it's a very, very funny and very great film, and I would definitely cult it as well. Anything else to say about Kick-Ass?
Well, Zach, I think we need to get back to headquarters.
Hit Girl, we'll go to Safe House B. Nicolas Cage is great in that movie. All right, so for my co-host...
Nick, yes, that's my name, Nick.
I'm your host, Zach, saying we hope that you enjoyed the podcast. Please visit the blog at cultedorcanon.blogspot.com.
And you can also fan us on the Facebook.
That's right. We are apparently on the Facebook, although I haven't seen the fan page yet. So I could just go there and it could just be a bunch of insults about me. Go ahead.
It's not. It quickly goes and changes.
Honestly, I'd be okay with that. I wouldn't mind. And it's not like we think that we're hilarious or that we're smart or worthy in any way of talking about movies, because Nick and I are both very self-deprecating people. So if you don't like the podcast, don't listen to the podcast. All right, Nick, I'm going to get going because I have a job interview in the morning. So
yeah, good luck with that.
Thanks, buddy. I will talk to you very soon.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.